Hello, everyone. I'm Sarah and I have COVID.
I'm Liz and I slept 4 hours last night.
Power couple. This is going to be so good. I know that my voice is terrible. I have some tea. I'm hoping that will help. And if it doesn't, then I'll just cry about it later.
We've been here for what, almost 4 years? They've hurt us in so many states.
It's
for
true.
So many jobs, so many rooms,
so many stages of life. It's true. We got through the whole pandemic. Oh, I think that's actually really true.
It has, but I was still a grad student and I haven't been in grad school for almost 3 years now.
I was still a grad student when we started.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad I'm out of school.
I love listening to my little baby coworkers talk about like the exams and tests they have to do, or even the ones that are in high school. And I'm like, I am so fucking glad that that's not my life anymore.
Never have to take a test again, because honestly, what even were tests? Like, that's a disgusting thing to have to do to another person.
Yes, I was good at tests because I was good at memorizing, but that's not actually knowing anything.
No, but that's the American school system.
It is. You just got to memorize a bunch of stuff.
Right.
And the best people at it succeed. And if you have a shitty memory, sucks to be you.
Right. You just end up hanging at your local bar. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Love a local bar every now and then. Episode 75. It's a big one.
So many.
I know. And we have an announcement to make.
We do.
We're like, yay, 75. Look how far we've come.
And... bad news.
And we're done.
Goodbye. It's been a good run. See ya.
It has been such a good run. And we are now going to fuck off.
For a while.
For a while. We're taking
it
a break.
Forever. It could be for a little bit. We're
it's
just
like
going to play it by ear.
Your parents separate.
You'll still see us at Christmas.
You'll see us at Christmas. Don't worry. We'll be on Instagram here and there. I'm going to post our listening guide. So if you haven't listened to all the episodes, you're new to the podcast, you don't know where to start, never fear. Your Christmas present is coming, and I will tell you what order you should listen to the episodes in, depending on your interests. Let's say you're really into the crazy nun episodes. We've got you covered. Don't worry.
So many.
Let's say you really want stories of saints who are tortured in crazy, brutal ways. No problem. There's plenty to go around. Let's say you want some love stories. We can make that happen for you. So just hang tight. I'm working on it. You'll see it on Instagram. And I might even record myself reading it just for fun and release that as a little mini episode. But yeah, other than that, you know, we're going to take some time. We're going to figure out what we want to do going forward, if anything. And I personally have had a great time on the podcast. I've learned so much. I've changed so much about, you know, like what I believe. And it's just been such an amazing, this is like sounding like an exit interview where I'm like, oh my gosh, I've loved the opportunity to work at this company. But
do
I really
have questions for us.
Yeah. Do you have any questions for us? DM us on Instagram. Yeah, and tell us what you've liked about the podcast. Give us a little review. Give us an exit interview. We'd love to hear from you. Should we get into the episode?
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay, let's fucking go. I can't wait. Speaking of extra virgin, Liz and I were talking olive oil during the break. And which, anyway.
You don't need to know why.
Yeah.
How did it come up in between our intro and now? You're forever going to be in the dark.
It's a mystery. Don't think about it too much. Today, I would like to tell you, oh, first of all, we're doing New Orleans. Welcome. I feel like we've been talking about New Orleans here and there since we started the podcast. I know that you wanted us to go there. I also wanted us to go there. A pandemic happened. We did not go there. I still would love to go.
Yeah, someday I will definitely take you when the weather is better and I have disposable income.
Heard. Yeah, when it's not the holidays. So today I want to tell you a story about some French girls who were sent to New Orleans in the 18th century, the Ursuline convent they stayed in, and the dark rumors about the situation that have persisted for centuries now. So this is the story of the Casket Girls of New Orleans. These girls go by many names. They're also called the Cassette Girls, the Pelican Girls, the King's Daughters, or even Vampires. What? Before I begin, I have to come clean and tell you that this story is folklore. I'll get into the historical events and what we know for sure happened, and then I'll basically tell the most interesting version of the story, which, you know, I love to do. But this is the kind of story that, after researching, it filled my Instagram feed with ads for New Orleans ghost tours. So we're not exactly in the scholarly realm. but it is so, so fun. And in the same way that hagiography that we know is not historically true, it's still worthwhile to explore because of what it can tell us about the area, the time period, and the fears and desires of the people who pass this story on. So, set the scene. We're in the early 1700s in New Orleans, in the new French colony of Louisiana. The city was founded in early 1718 by the French as La Nouvelle Orléans, under the direction of Louisiana Governor Jean-Baptiste Lemoine de Bienville. Best guess. Thumbs up. Thank you for that. The site of the city was selected for its relatively high ground, which is funny because it's like below sea level. But they're like, oh, high ground. And its proximity to trading routes. Essentially, whoever controlled this area was going to be in control of the entire Mississippi River Valley. And the city soon became the capital of French Louisiana. In those early colonial days, the population of New Orleans was, let's say, very colorful. The city was filled with fur trappers, prospective gold miners, mercenaries, deported slaves. It was what you'd expect a port city to be. Lots of different people from different nationalities mingling. Things are not going to go particularly well all the time. And so we have letters from Governor Bienville to the French king that are just full of his concerns about the riffraff. He's like, this is not a suitable environment. Things are crazy. Like, at any minute, everyone could just fucking kill each other. We need some civilization here. And one group of people particularly lacking in early New Orleans was women, which always seems to be the case with these settlements. The European powers go off and conquer the New World, and they build some temporary shelter. They have a saloon. Maybe they're drinking their ale. They look around, they're like, wait a second. They're like,
man, it is a sausage fest around here.
Exactly. They're like, something's missing, and I can't quite put my finger on it. Literally. Ew. So there are very few women in New Orleans, which, as you can imagine, is a big issue. And not in just in terms of, like, the future of the colony, like, the next generation. It's an issue right now. Like, the French colonial settlers are not behaving well. They are sleeping with sex workers, and a lot of diseases being transmitted. They are raping Native women, of course, which is not helping their relationship with the Native tribes. So Governor Bienville realizes that these guys need some wives. So he writes to the king, SOS, send wives, XOXO Jean Baptiste. This is familiar territory for France, who has had North American colonies for a long time now. You would think they would have figured it out by now. You know, the wives should go with their settler husbands. Like, the settlers should be married men. Back in Quebec, girls and young women were often sent over from France to become settlers' wives. These women were called the filles du roi, or king's daughters. Bienville is like, we need our own king's daughters down here in Louisiana. Send these awful men some wives and maybe they will start to behave. So the king does send some daughters over, but they're not exactly the daughters the governor was hoping for. The first couple waves of girls and young women sent to French Louisiana, which also, it doesn't just include modern day Louisiana, the state. It's also like Alabama. Mobile, Alabama was like a big French settlement, and Dauphin Island in Alabama. But the first few waves of girls sent to New Orleans were basically the results of like a French street cleaning operation. We have a lot of undesirables, quote unquote, such as, you know, sex workers, criminals, the mentally ill.
Feeling very Australia.
Yes, exactly. It's like, okay, let's take the opportunity. We'll go ahead and deport anyone we don't want in the motherland to the colony. Which is really sad, especially considering these girls were like as young as 12. And, you know, like mentally ill people being, I know, like they weren't super well off in France anyway, probably like in a disgusting asylum, not being treated particularly well. But then to have to like go on a ship for 6 months, probably pick up some diseases there, just to arrive in a brand new place, a new country, new continent, with no way to support themselves, no safety nets in place. Of course, the settlers don't want to marry these women. This is not what they had in mind. So then these women are just on their own. 10 out of 10 failure across the board. This did not help anything. Bienville writes again to the king and is like, are you kidding me with this? I'm once again asking, where are the good women? Where are the good girls? Where are the virgins? Send us some extra virgin virgins.
The king's like, beggars can't be choosers.
Essentially.
You get what you get.
Oh, exactly. And you don't throw a fit, which is the first lesson.
And he's definitely throwing a fit.
Yeah. But finally, the king is like, okay. I will try my best to rustle up some virgins for you. Enter the casket girls who came over. Some sources say on a ship called Le Pelican in 1728, hence why they're sometimes called the Pelican Girls. It's complicated. I think that that ship brought women to Alabama and not New Orleans. And they get confused a lot because the ship goes back and forth. Like, this ship's sole purpose is to like bring people to the colony and back. So it's possible they could have come over on this ship too. We don't know for sure. But these girls, who are said to have been aged 12 to 26, I believe, were apparently virgins who had been raised in church orphanages. The term casket girl is sort of a misleading translation of the French word casquette or cassette, which refers to the type of chest that they carried. Little chest, rectangular looking, contained all their worldly possessions, which, again, not much. They're orphans. Some sources say these girls were chaperoned from France by nuns, and most agree that they came with a priest who was instructed to marry them to settlers as quickly as possible. According to legend, however, that did not quite work out. And here's where we start to leave historical record and enter the realm of legend and folklore. So everything from here on out should be taken with a grain of salt, or not, if you are just looking for a good time. The story goes that these girls did not immediately get snatched up and married off because they looked kind of weird. The voyage from France, like I mentioned, took about 6 months back then, during which time the girls would have been kept below deck, as was proper for young ladies. So they were very pale. They burned very easily in the Louisiana sun. It's like subtropical or whatever. Like, put me in Louisiana without my SPF. Watch my skin blister. And anyway. And the rectangular chests they carried looked rather coffin-like. So rumors begin to circulate that something is up with these girls. Something's wrong. Maybe we shouldn't marry them. The kinder rumor is that the poor girls are sickly from their journey, which is likely. They passed through the West Indies. They could have contracted yellow fever there or various other diseases. The juicier rumor was that they were vampires and or vampire smugglers. More on that in a moment.
Vampire smuggler, though, something else I want on my business card.
It shall be done.
I'm going to have so many jobs.
The print is going to be 11 font. But we'll get
I'm a jack of all trades. I do it all. Grave vampire digger, smuggler, vampire smuggler.
Freelance grave digger, human sausage. I can't remember the rest. But I still have it. I'll figure it out.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
I'll save it forever. While the casket girls waited to be married off, they were said to have been housed at the Ursuline Convent on Chartres Street. The Ursuline Order had arrived in the city just a few years prior to this and had immediately founded this convent and academy to educate young girls and women. I read that like the wealthy daughters of, you know, someone like the governor's daughter might have gone there, or even like Spanish settlers who were more wealthy would send their daughters there. Really interesting mix of cultures. But that's Catholicism. Like, this is gonna, this an academy like this would transcend like the French borders of the settlement, which I think is fascinating. And one of the things that makes Catholicism so interesting is it is all over the world. And anyway, not that I'm doing like an ad for the Catholic Church, not sponsored. that felt weird. Anyway, this was the first boarding school established in Louisiana. The sisters ran the school and an orphanage on the first floor of the convent, and they lived on the second floor. That convent building is now the oldest structure, not just in New Orleans, not just in Louisiana, but in the entire Mississippi River Valley. It would go on to survive not one, but two devastating fires that hit the French Quarter in 1788 and 1794. The sisters cared for people during the yellow fever outbreaks and the wounded in the War of 1812 and the Civil War. Lots of ghosts in that building. it's now a museum, and it's essentially seen all of American history. So cool. So haunted. Back to the casket girls. Legend tells us that when these girls arrived, the nuns housed them and their coffin-looking chests in the third floor attic of the convent. They closed the now iconic shutters of the attic windows to protect the girls' virtue. Like, no chance of these gross men creeping on them, watching them change, etc. But soon after they arrived, weird things started happening. Here is a list of omens that I have compiled from various sources. Mirrors in the convent disappeared. Neighbors of the convent in the area, the French Quarter, became ill. Crops failed. Cats and dogs lived together. I'm like, that's just a household. That's just two pets. But all right, cats and dogs live together. That's an omen. And most distressing of all, corpses began showing up in the French Quarter, drained of all their blood. That's an issue. I will concede that. Sources differ as to what happened after this. Some say that the Ursuline sisters were really freaked out by all this, and they actually kicked the casket girls out of the convent. Other sources don't mention the sisters kicking out the girls, but instead say that there was some misbehavior toward the girls by the community men. The men were treating them poorly, accusing them of either being vampires or transporting vampires from France to New Orleans. The rumor was either that their little chests contained like actual vampires, which like if you look at the size of these chests, they're like a foot long. If that.
It's so funny to me. These little girls came over on a ship with mini vampires.
Mini vampires. I'm imagining in the show Disenchantment, the demon Lucy, who's yes. just this little cat looking guy. Maybe that kind of vampire, but not like with a full grown adult. Miniatures.
And now I'm thinking about the corpses that are found on the street being attacked by an army of miniature vampires.
I mean, an army would be scary, but like the that just a little guy. That would
freak me the fuck out. Like if I walked around the corner, not like a full-grown vampire man, but like 500 like
little ones. It's like the would you rather question. Like, would you rather fight one adult vampire or 500 mini vampires? Yeah, so maybe the mini vampires actually are scarier. So either they were doing that, they were transporting mini vampires, or their chests contained their own ancestral soil, and the girls themselves were vampires. So according to vampire lore, if you're not up to speed on the lore of vampires, vampires need to carry with them their ancestral soil when they travel. Otherwise, they'll never be able to rest. So in most versions of the story, the girls are said to have left the convent. Whether they were kicked out by the nuns, whether they were married off, whether they became sex workers because they couldn't find husbands. Maybe a mix of all three, we're not sure. But in some versions they stay, which we'll talk about in a second. The sources that I read all ended the story with a variation of something spooky happening in the convent after the vampire rumors start circulating. In the versions of the story where the girls leave the convent, the nuns go up to the third floor to collect the girls' chests, either because they were getting married or they didn't need them anymore, or in some cases, the King of France had actually demanded that the nuns send the girls back because they were being mistreated. Like, these are my daughters and they are not going to be treated this way. I highly fucking doubt that that happened. What would the king care? But either way, when the nuns opened the chests, they were empty. So, you know, whether they were vampires carrying their soil or whether they had little mini vampires in them, either way, the vampires have left the convent and are now living among the citizens of New Orleans. So that's scary. We don't love it. I mean, I love it, but like I mentioned, in some versions, the girls never leave the convent. In fact, they are forbidden to leave by the nuns. They're locked forever in the third floor attic. The windows and doors are said to be bolted shut with silver nails that have been blessed by the Pope. This is not out of the realm of something a Pope might do. That's the funniest part.
That's just weird. Be like, sir, I need you to bless these nails. Why? Don't worry about it.
I mean,
it may or may not have something to do with the 500 miniature vampires, but
we saw with like Hubert of Liege and the nails with the rabies thing, which like they thought that rabies was like being a werewolf. So it's not like out of the question, I don't think, which makes it so funny, is it's this like clearly anti-Catholic superstition that like the Pope knows about vampires and like has control over them. And it's like, no, like they're not real, but I could totally see it happening also. So it's funny to me. But there's no official record of anything like this happening, of course. I highly doubt it. No source even mentions the name of the Pope who was supposed to have done this, which wouldn't be hard to do. You just Google, like, who was Pope at the time? Like, why aren't you saying? Because it's not true. Although some sources do say that Pope John Paul visited the United States in New Orleans and he re-blessed the silver nails. There was TV at the time. You think we wouldn't have a video of him doing that? You're crazy. Anyway, this is it's plain old storytelling, and I, for one, can't get enough of it. The story of the Casket Girls has influenced a lot of pop culture and is really stuck in people's minds. You see it in ghost shows all the time. People will sort of like go on the tour, the museum tour. They'll camp outside and sort of watch the shutters to see if they open. That's something that's said to happen. It's inspired novels, movies, TV shows, operas, ballets. It's become one of the origin stories for vampires, not just in New Orleans, but in the New World. The Casket Girls, both back in the 18th century and now, seem to represent this like particular American anxiety about things and people from the old country following us to America. Which, of course, we still have this anxiety. This is our fear of immigration that pops up again and again. And it's just like gross and superstitious and silly. But also it's just it's like part of it's in our country's DNA. Like this is even before our country was a country and it was still there. It was very present. So anyway, that's really all I have. But I'm obsessed. I can't stop thinking about it. And I want to know what you think and what the listeners think.
I love the little story of them. I love all the little spooky stories in New Orleans. There's so many.
Why do you think New Orleans has so many? Like, why is it just a haunted ass town?
Well, I'm going to talk about voodoo and it has something to do with it.
Yay! Okay, I can't wait. Let's just do that.
Okay. Okay, so if we talk about New Orleans, I have to talk about Marie Laveau. And if I talk about Marie Laveau, I have to talk about voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to spend a lot more time on voodoo than I do on Marie Laveau.
Okay.
For that, I want to go ahead and give a shout out to the Ancient Mysteries episode on voodoo. You can watch it on YouTube. It's an hour and a half long. And I'm worried kind of going into it based on like the intros, like vibes, and the fact that it was made in 2003, that it was going to be like heavily biased toward making voodoo sound like super barbaric. Because I mean, they had the people like possessed by the spirits and like the African masks. And I'm like just preparing myself for what the fuck I was about to witness. I was wonderfully surprised. It's actually like super positive overall. It interviews historians, congregants, a voodoo priestess. They show meetings and pilgrimages. They get into the gods and slavery and politics. There's a shit ton of amazing quotes that I'm going to poorly paraphrase and just butcher the fuck out of because I was not taking notes. I wanted to take notes as I watched, but an hour and a half later, I was like, fuck, I was glued to my TV and I didn't write down jack shit.
Whoa, that's a good compliment.
Yes, I recommend it because I have a problem with getting on my phone while I watch TV and I didn't get on it once. I was just fascinated.
I want to watch it.
I recommend it. Very well put together. And what was nice for me is that they divided it into a bunch of sections. So it wasn't like I had to pay attention to one really long narrative for like an hour and 30 minutes. It's like, like 5 to 10 minute chunks where they just talk about different things for that little bit. So it's good. First off, the shit I say about voodoo does not broadly apply. Voodoo or vodu, meaning spirit, is more orthopraxic than orthodox, which are terms I have not used in some time. For those who have not heard these terms yet, it pretty much simply means that Voodooisants, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, or followers of voodoo, are more united by shared practices than by shared theology.
Mm-hmm.
Each congregation of worshipers is going to place different emphasis on certain gods and worship those gods with different offerings than, say, the congregation on the other side of town or the next city over.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, voodoo has gods. Unlike witchcraft, voodoo is an actual, like, religion. I keep losing my spot because I didn't make my text big enough, so I apologize. I'm going to put my finger where I'm at. Why did I write such long paragraphs? God damn.
Mm-hmm.
Voodoo has an uncountable amount of gods, due in large part to the fact that voodoo is about your relationship with spirits and the relationship between spirits. There's the mortal plane, which is inhabited by us, and we are essentially just spirits of the fleshly variety. I mean, we have souls, we can commune with the fucking universe. Mm-hmm. And then there's a spiritual plane, which has spirits and gods and angels and ancestors and the recently deceased and so on. Pretty much anything, like, intangible.
Okay.
And voodoo is all about healing and about bringing these different spirits into conversation with one another. So our spirits into conversation with gods, our spirits into conversation with our ancestors, and all just for the purpose of, you know, being close, bringing positive energy into your life, making good things happen.
Sounds great.
Yes. Side note that I'm not using, like, any of the technical terms for these things because I will butcher the pronunciations. Like, whenever it comes to Louisiana, I don't trust my ability to pronounce anything, even if it looks French, because there's just such, like, an Americanized, like, way that the French is pronounced, and I never guess correctly. I used to follow somebody on TikTok, and I can't remember his name now, but he had a series where he would just show you, like, last names and words and stuff from, like, Louisiana and be like, you guess how it's pronounced, and then I'm gonna say it. Never right. Zero 0% correct every time.
Okay, so, yeah, maybe we just shouldn't.
Yeah, town names and all kinds of stuff. You'd be like, yes, say it. What would you call it? And I'd be like, I can't live in Louisiana. I would never be able to direct anybody anywhere. I couldn't be a teacher because I couldn't say anybody's names.
True.
It's just not a good match.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, voodoo has no text to follow. It's an oral tradition because it comes from what is now, I think it's Benin, Africa. It's been a second since I watched the documentary and I did not Google it this morning to remember how to say it. Like, for the most part, that's where it comes from. By which I mean when Africans of that area were brought over during the slave trade, they recreated the religion of their home while also syncretizing it with religions of the area, their new area. A historian made the analogy that, like, young slave men reconstructing voodoo isn't much different than if you asked a random selection of American teenage boys to reconstruct all of American culture from scratch. It's going to leave stuff out. It's going to be heavily skewed in certain ways.
Right.
It's not going to show, like, all the nuances.
Right. That's so interesting, though.
Yeah. Whenever it compared it to that, I'm like, yeah, I would not trust, like, the 18-year-old boys I work with to recreate American culture. I just would not.
When I was a GA for one of Pinckney's classes, it was the apocalyptic literature class. And you did this activity where these, like, documents, like, important American documents were, like, cut up and you had to reconstruct them based on memory. So, like, if you had the Declaration of Independence in the apocalypse, could you, like, put it back together in the right way? Nobody could do it. Everybody got it wrong. But you know what they got right? Poker Face by Lady Gaga. Hit Me Baby One More Time, Britney Spears. Like, and those would become the new anthems of the apocalyptic world. So you never know what, like, what would survive and what would perish.
Yeah, kind of reminds me of, I don't even know what it's called because it wasn't a very good movie, but where I think it's the Beatles pretty much get like wiped out of like the memory of history, but like one guy remembers them and he tries to recreate all of their songs, but he can't remember the lyrics. So it's exactly some of them like are that. Like spot on and some of them are just bullshit.
Wait, I want to watch that.
It's not a super fantastic movie, but it is amusing.
It doesn't sound super fantastic.
There are moments that it's just funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Just imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
As for the syncretism, enslavers were just, like, terrified of voodoo. And it wasn't because they were terrified of, like, the magic in particular and, like, being attacked. It's because voodoo was just enslaved people's connection to their homeland.
Mm-hmm.
It united slaves, it reminded them of home, it gave them an identity other than being slaves. And the documentary talked about like them trying to use voodoo as a weapon to make people perform rituals where they would forget the land that they came from so that they could move into their new life. But voodoo has and like always will be a very political tool. It has been the victim of a massive smear campaign for centuries for mostly really racist reasons.
Of course.
To get around the ban of the practice of voodoo, enslaved Africans, they would disguise the tools of their practice as other things. Like voodoo dolls were not always dolls, but rag dolls are much more innocuous than like wooden figurines.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, and voodoo dolls, not evil, FYI, again, part of the smear campaign.
Mm.
Voodooisants also align their gods with Catholic saints and Catholic holy days. For example, the god Dambala, which is this primordial snake god deity. He was equated with St. Patrick, sometimes Moses, because of St. Patrick's snake affiliation.
Yeah.
So they're like, we're worshiping St. Patrick, mm-hmm. Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. Mm-hmm.
Not the snake god Dambala. Right. No way.
Well, that's cool.
Yes, so Dambala is honored on St. Patrick's Day. Other holy days in voodoo include ancestor worship on All Saints Day and All Souls Day, as well as other gods being worshipped on dates like St. James Day and the Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel.
Mm.
So I think it's really neat that they kind of disguised everything and then down the line it became like super mixed up.
Right.
Back to the smear campaign, as I dive deeper into the, like, shared practices of voodoo. So voodoo was a reason for enslaved Africans in the Americas to, like, meet up on their leisure days. Like, it was an excuse for them to get together. And those meetings were prime opportunities for them to pass messages to each other, to organize things, like a revolt. Haiti, for example, enslaved Africans revolted and liberated themselves in 1791, actually using voodoo. Like, voodoo was the catalyst for, like, the ending of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So, a man named Macandal, which stuck out to me because living next door to Macanda, Illinois, mm-hmm. That's pretty much how that's spelled, but with an L on the end.
Oh.
Yeah, Macandal. He was a supposed witch or maker of poisons who was mythologized after he escaped from being burned at the stake by turning into a lizard.
Slay.
I know. Would not have been my first thought if I was being burned at the stake. Because if I was a lizard, I could get away right now.
If I was a lizard, I wouldn't have any of these problems.
No, none of these problems. After him, a man named Bukman continued to rally enslaved Africans using voodoo. is a way to get together, but also a voodoo ritual was the signal for the revolt to begin. Accounts say that the enslaved sacrificed a black pig, drank its blood, and at the sound of voodoo drums, a band instrument, they attacked.
Ooh.
And they won too against like the well-armed French army, nice. Which was kind of surprising, but the documentary points out, it's like, yeah, you could say that they were empowered by, you know, the voodoo ritual and they gained like supernatural capabilities, or you could consider the fact that fighting their enslavers is a matter of you succeed and you gain freedom, you die, and you get to go to this pseudo-Africa afterlife and be happy, or you get to remain enslaved and be heinously like punished for the revolt.
Right. Right. Like, there's really case, not much to lose.
No, it's like, of course you would fight like hell. Like, absolutely.
And that reminds me of the Boxer Rebellion and how, and the Celts, and how it was like, it's the underdog can really win sometimes because the person, the people keeping them the underdog are actually so afraid of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you add in like a supernatural element and it's like, whoa.
Yeah. And it, that, and this made me think of like the berserkers. When you get into like the Nordic stuff, it's like,
yeah,
if they die, it's a reward and winning is a reward.
Valhalla.
All you got to do is just throw in a little bit of the supernatural and they are fucking terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So voodoo heavily politicized, what enslavers did not propagate, white Christians and Hollywood did. Hollywood is very much responsible for like the zombie craze. And I didn't write this down, but Hollywood has kind of taught us that you are afraid of zombies, like zombies are something that's going to attack you.
Mm.
Whereas in like voodoo kind of culture, you aren't afraid of zombies, you're afraid of becoming a zombie, which is just you're dead trying to enjoy your afterlife and somebody comes, steps in, reanimates you and enslaves you and forces you to do the bidding.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not afraid that something's going to crawl out of the grave and eat my brains. I'm afraid that instead of getting to enjoy my afterlife, I might be forced to like work on a plantation for more years.
Mm, yeah.
So just to talk about some of the things that you'll see in voodoo. Voodoo drums. They were seen as evil. You know, connections to the revolt, the sound of them being your signal to attack. And they're also just a weird thing that you don't really see in churches. It's just a bunch of people like beating on drums. So it's, mm-hmm. it's just this foreign thing.
Yeah.
The documentary I watched said that the drums are easiest to understand as a spiritual telegraph. That each of them is pounded to a very specific rhythm to communicate a very specific spirit, which I thought was super cool. You know, that it's not just music, part of the revelry, that it has like a very specific purpose.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Voodoo dolls, not about jabbing pins into them and torturing your enemy, which is what you pretty much is your immediate association because mm-hmm. of how we've demonized voodoo. Dolls can be used for such things as directing one's own energy to certain places in your body for healing purposes or to heal others.
Acupuncture.
Yes. I couldn't completely follow the documentary, but it also talks about them being used for like psychotherapy. But yeah, just a lot of like energy work. Divination. Despite the common misconception we have, divination isn't really about telling the future, not from like a good reader. It's more about how moments of your past impact your present, impact the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tool to help you recognize like how to proceed. Like, you had your heart broken in the past, you're afraid of commitment now. If you continue to be afraid, you will not have the relationship you so deeply desire. Like, it's just a chain right. of events.
Patterns and symbols.
Yes. And it's like, if that's not the future that you want, the one that you're headed toward, and you want this instead, you need to identify these parts of your present and your past and make efforts to change what's mm-hmm. going to happen. Paraphrasing again, the people in the documentary, the only things in your life you can't change are the day that you're born and the day that you die. Mm-hmm. Everything else, choice, your choice, others' choices, all impacting each other.
Whoa. I like that.
Yes, I do too. Moving on. Animal sacrifice. This is about to become a soapbox really fast.
Uh-oh, okay.
A historian pointed out that sacrifice comes from the Latin meaning to make sacred. It is not about killing. It is not about death, bloodshed, anything. And if you have mm-hmm. a visceral reaction that you want to disagree with why animal sacrifice and something like Santeria and voodoo and hoodoo, all of that is bad, I invite you to investigate if you have the exact same visceral reaction to Christian animal sacrifice to God in the Bible.
That and the Eucharist. And
yes.
Yeah. It's the same.
It's the same. So if dancing and singing during voodoo rites bothers you, if you feel weird about it, does it bother you if Christians dance and sing in a church? If voodoo miracles bother you, do Christian ones bother you? If pain rituals like holding peppers in your mouth so that your suffering gets the attention of the gods bothers you, do hair shirts and self-flagellation and fasting bother you in the exactly. exact same way? And if spirit possession, which is a big one that looks spooky because people are like writhing around and stuff, if that bothers you, does speaking in tongues or white mediums on reality TV channeling spirits bother you?
First of all, yes, it does. But yeah, you're right. And also, to quote the amazing film Lady Bird, directed by Greta Gerwig, just because something looks ugly doesn't mean it's morally wrong. And I think it's so true. Yeah, the image of like, oh no, these like scary brown people dancing around a fire. It's like, okay, what about the scary white people singing around candles? Like
holding hands, singing Kumbaya. Like, what the fuck, man?
Right. It's all human stuff. It's human stuff that's been human stuff forever.
Yes. Very much so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you have particular biases toward certain things, always sit down and think about it. But this is kind of your reframing for voodoo. Mm-hmm. I personally love voodoo because it's very similar to how I practice when I practice, which isn't very often anymore because I'm old and tired. Your relationship to the gods is very familial and friendly. There's no middleman between worshiper and God, like a priest or a pope that you have to like go through to get access to the divine. Mm-hmm. Offerings are also very individualized, which is also individualized offerings. So different gods and spirits have different connections to different animals. They like different colors, different foods, drinks, colors. All of this, they're like people, so their altars are very different. And you'll see like witches will reach out to other witches and be like, I really want to invoke like Loki, what is something that I can offer him? And people will be like, oh, he really likes whiskey, oh, he's really big on spiders, just little things that like people say. And it's like, okay, well, I wouldn't offer whiskey and spiders to anybody. Just
right,
just
like Aphrodite look. Probably doesn't want whiskey and spiders.
No, Saint Patrick probably doesn't want whiskey and spiders.
He might want whiskey. He is Irish.
So much whiskey for Saint Patrick.
I mean, I try to observe that ritual every Saint Patrick's Day, just in honor of the man, the myth, the legend.
Just get absolutely sloshed
in his name. Amen.
just like God would have wanted.
Mm-hmm. Just Irish car bombs in the name of the Lord.
Yes, back to there being no middleman. This is really big with spiritual possession. Spiritual possession is like super important to voodoo. And again, to paraphrase very poorly, white Christians go to church and speak with God. We go to the temple and become God.
Mm.
Which I thought was a really good way to see it. Spiritual possession is pretty much just allowing a god or an ancestor or a spirit, what have you, into your body to pass a message to other people. It's a way for practitioners to be heard and know that they're being heard.
Hmm.
One instance in the documentary is they take a pilgrimage to Haiti. They're underneath the waterfalls performing these rituals, and the voodoo priestess is, I think it was, she was possessed by Damballa, but it was a signal to everybody else that the gods are here with us. They have heard our like blessings, are asking for like healing to occur. Like, we have been acknowledged by the other plane. So they didn't even really, Damballa didn't even really have to say anything. It's just like, he appeared, we have been witnessed.
Yeah.
Other neat things, the Potomitan, which is like P-O-T-E-A-U, like French kind of Poteau, and then Mitan, M-I-T-A-N. It's this large pole that's at the center of many meetings. So if you see voodoo, you might see them dancing around like a pole. Sometimes it's painted red. And this is pretty much just a physical representation of a tree that stretches from, I whacked myself in the face.
That scared me. I was like, oh my God. I thought there was like someone in the room with you.
No, I hit myself in the face. I forgot where I was at.
For the listeners, Liz's glasses just jumped off her face. Frightening me deeply.
It's not the first time I've done that. I've punched myself in the face before.
Oh, I've done that too.
I was opening a cabinet and I forgot where my face and my hands were.
Classic.
Yep. Good times. Anyway, physical representation of a tree that stretches from heaven to earth, making it kind of a symbolic, like, interstate crossroads meeting spot for like us and the divine.
Mm.
So you'll see a lot of ceremonies and stuff conducted around it. Voodoo has both priests and priestesses, fathers and mothers, respectively. They have, again, terminology that I'm not going to use because I will fuck it up. Voodoo congregations also have a pretty even gender divide underneath the even divide, or maybe even female skewed leaders of the temples, which I'm sure has not helped at all its reputation, because we know that... you know, when it comes to like pagan stuff, people who worship goddesses, like female cults, all of that immediately like vilified. Right. And women in the Bible constantly have to be vilified. It's like, we can't worship women.
Right. I mean, the only good things you can be as a woman are a virgin or dead. So
yeah.
Any type of power at all.
Do not think you can lead a church. That is not your place.
I mean, that's just out of the question.
Yes. So the fact that females have such like an important role in voodoo probably does not help their reputation at all.
No.
There are 60 million-ish adherents to voodoo around the world of different races and ethnicities. The documentary interviewed white and black members of a congregation, which I thought was interesting. Hopefully this gives you a very general idea of the religion as I move into talking about Marie Laveau. So, first off, Marie Laveau is not a unique name, so records can get very muddy, because we think the Marie Laveau who was born on this day was our Marie Laveau, but there are many Marie Laveaus. So,
oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, Marie is a common first name. Laveau is obviously going to be relatively common in a section of the United States where French last names are super popular.
Right.
But yeah, I got to thinking about my own ancestors, like whenever I'm like tracing them back, it's like all it takes is you get like one John Smith, something like that. And it's like, well, I can't go from here because I officially don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yep, that's really true. I'm thankful that I have a lot of like weird ass names, especially like on the Czech side. Like there's like there's no like once they got over here, there was no mistaking them. Like we know who you are.
My family was so much that like for just like four generations, everybody decided to name their kid after their dad. So it becomes super difficult to figure out who the fuck is who, or records get weird because sometimes my family is listed by their first name, sometimes by their middle name, sometimes by a shortened version of their middle name. And it's oh, fuck, man.
Didn't they think about how hard that would make it for you?
Did they really? Could they not have thought that through?
Right.
Everyone deserves a unique name like me that nobody can ever spell and just ruins their life constantly.
Everybody deserves that.
Yes. Anyway, Marie Laveau. You'll frequently hear that she was born on September 10th, 1801 in the French Quarter to prepare for me to fuck up a bunch of names going forward. Marguerite d'Arcantel. Who's a free woman of color who may have practiced voodoo herself, depending on what source you read. Marie's father is debated. It may be Charles Laveau, son of a white Louisiana politician, or Charles Laveau with an X at the end, since they're pronounced exactly the same way, a free man of color. Some sources described Laveau herself as white passing, but she's very commonly depicted in media as being black.
Yeah.
Like almost all of the art and appearances I've seen in things like American Horror Story, for example, very much not white passing, just black. Mm-hmm. Laveau had two daughters with a carpenter named, I don't know how we Americanize French names in Louisiana, so I'm going to say Jacques Paris. But it could be Marie, obviously. Mm-hmm. They married in 1819, and Jacques either died or ran off in 1820 because Marie Laveau starts calling herself a widow that year. Some people are like, he died, and some people are like, it would have been super embarrassing for her and her two children to have been abandoned. So much preferable to be like, oh yeah, it's so tragic, he passed away.
I mean, if my husband left me, he would also be dead to me, so
stop telling everybody I'm dead.
I'm right here. We always go back to that Brother Bear quote. Like every single episode we find a way to bring it back.
I love that movie so much.
It's really good.
Yes, it's so sad.
It really is.
Anyway, their wedding was performed by a Capuchin priest, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. After her husband disappears, Laveau gets together with, again, gonna butcher the fuck out of this because his name is 1, 2, 3, 4, like 5, 6 words long. Louis Christophe Dominique Dumini du Galpion.
Whoa.
I made an attempt.
Mm-hmm.
You will see sources saying that she had 15 kids with him, but it is pointed out that that number could also just be including grandchildren. Some sources say they only had 7 kids together, only 2 of which lived to adult age.
Oh my God.
Yes, very sad. But one of them was Marie Laveau II, and she's kind of famous in her own right. Not as famous as her mom because she wasn't as charismatic. But she definitely tried to take up the mantle after her mother died.
Mm.
Laveau worked as a hairstylist for a large portion of her life, which gave her access to rich white folks and their gossip. As a voodoo priestess, she gained clients from her workplace and through connections made from her workplace. offering things like Grigori bags or performing rituals. I didn't really look into what Grigori bags are. I know that you can buy them in New Orleans. I know that they include different like herbs and stuff like that. I think they can help grant wishes, bring good fortune, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's G-R-I-S two times, or okay, sometimes without the S. It's just Grigori. Anyway, this is important because people who believe Laveau was more or less like a very charismatic con woman will argue that she only seemed like a mystic because she could use the gossip she overheard in her workplace as a tool to convince other people of her divination skill.
Mm.
Despite her maybe being a con woman, Laveau still seems to have like an overall very positive reputation. She was kind, she helped people, she fed the poor, she tended to the sick during the yellow fever epidemic, she cured people, gave free lessons to poor women in the community, she visited and ministered to prisoners, saved people from prison and execution with rituals, perform rituals for free, and so on. I don't know if you can hear Hannibal. He's scratching the wall right now.
Just a little.
Hannibal, knock the fuck off.
Hannibal, we're talking about Marie Laveau.
God damn, man.
So first anyway, of all, how dare you?
Laveau sits at this intersection of motherfuckers.
He waited Hannibal until you started talking again.
He did. Hannibal. Hey, Laveau sits at this intersection of saint and witch. She performs rituals, crafts spells, divine things, and may or may not have a pet snake. People are really split on that.
Mm.
My cat's being psychotic. I apologize. She's also credited with miracles like overturning convictions, nooses failing to work on certain prisoners, and the wishes she supposedly grants from beyond the grave. So, yeah, he's being an absolute fucking psychopath.
No worries.
Laveau dies in 1881 at the age of 79, and is commonly thought to be buried in plot 347, which is the Galpian family crypt in St. Louis Cemetery number 1.
Hmm.
New Orleans cemeteries are unique, to say the least. They're amazing, a necropolis. They're these above-ground crypts that are clustered together, like the weirdest corn maze you'll ever explore. It's just dead bodies in concrete instead.
I love it.
So fascinating. I loved them so much when I visited 10 years ago. And I did visit the tomb that popular belief assigns as Laveau's. And I have a photo that I will upload.
Nice.
Laveau's tomb has offerings out front and is covered with X's. Believers will draw an X or three X's, spin three times, say their wish, knock on the tomb, and if their wish comes true, they return with an offering and circle their X as a signal to others that their wish was granted.
Did you do that?
I didn't make a wish because we had a tour guide and they can be really weird about that, but I did offer all of the change I had in my pocket.
Nice. That's cool.
I went down on spring break to New Orleans 10 years ago. I worked at the homeless shelters and the food banks, and I provided light bulbs to people who were hit by poverty. Like, we went into their homes, we took their old light bulbs, we gave them new light bulbs. It was a very good time. Met a lot of great people. We stayed at a hostel and explored the city in our off time. Get to go on a swamp tour, got my palms read. If New Orleans wasn't somewhere hurricanes, which turn off fly the fuck out of me, hit, like, I would live there in a heartbeat. The culture is unique. It really is like stepping into another world. Like, for sale signs on apartments and houses I would pass would include underneath for sale haunted or not haunted. Like, it would just be written underneath for sale, and I thought that was so fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
There's so much art and music. I watch so many street performances. There are a lot of things that I'll always remember, like making jambalaya in the hostel kitchen, or this one woman who sat on the hostel porch during a thunderstorm with a typewriter. I wanted to be her so bad. There's the trolleys, the food, the ferry. I loved it. I just loved every part of it. But that's all I have to say about voodoo and Marie Laveau. So
That was good. Good job. I learned a lot about voodoo. I didn't really know anything, so it wasn't hard to learn a lot.
Sarah walked away with one new fact.
Exactly. That's a 100% growth. That was good.
Anyway, this has been super fun. Thank
it
you
has.
For being our friends for the last like three and a half, four years.
Yeah. We did. And I loved it. And we will see you in some iteration, in some form, maybe in the next lifetime. Maybe this one. And until then, thanks be to God.
Blessed be.
Yay!